Hello, and welcome to Interest Rate Risk for Insurers, the 31st episode in the Crossing Thin Ice podcast series, brought to you by Actuarial Risk Management. This is Dave Ingram, and I am joined today, as always, by Max Rudolph. Today, Max is looking at how insurers can manage their interest rate risks so that both the policyholders and the shareholders get paid, instead of borrowing from the gods of risk to make outside profits some years and outside losses in others. Investment returns are a major driver of earnings for almost all insurers, making any risk that threatens that income an important risk. That being said, please know that nothing in today's podcast is intended to be investment advice. We are here to provide educational material. We hope that you also take advantage of our free newsletter and webcast for additional education on risk management topics. Now to you, Max. Let's get started.
Interest rate cycle. They go up, they go down. Think about them like a clock, where your guess of the current time is right twice a day. There's some randomness to changes in rates, but some factors get the direction right over time. Respondents to the 2024 Dangerous Risk Survey ranked it 10th overall. Over longer time horizons, government fiscal policy becomes the biggest factor. This is called fiscal dominance. Monetary policy can temporarily influence rates, but there's always an underlying pull towards a natural rate, like mean reversion, based on government spending, types of spending, so infrastructure is better than cash payments, regulation, and economic market forces. If rates are at historic lows and a financial firm fails to test a mean reversion scenario to historically normal levels, they're failing to do their job. In the spring of 2023, the crisis that engulfed Silicon Valley Bank and other regional banks was that simple. Rates went up and neither management nor regulators planned adequately for that possibility. Neither did their customers, including venture capital firms and other startups in the tech industry, caught with deposits well beyond FDIC guarantees, and yet they were bailed out. The banking industry retains large unrealized losses on their balance sheet, and many depend on FHLB loans. Additionally, in the murky world of shadow banks, the risks are less transparent and the business less regulated. Additional problems are likely, especially if rates move up from current levels. Insurance regulators tend to be slow identifying a new risk, but then try their best to protect retail customers. While this spike in rates provides an opportunity for those who think ahead to share what they had done to hedge this type of a bet, it's best to focus on learning from the mistakes of others and move forward. Many hope interest rates have peaked, but history tells us that rates can go higher. Five-year maturity treasuries peaked in 1981 at 16%, over triple those of today. It is not the risk manager's job to predict rates, only to prepare and provide competent counsel for management to discuss and make decisions. For financial firms like insurance companies, it's important to stress test in both directions. Rates below zero and above 15% are not out of the question. Government-issued bonds considered risk-free in Europe and Japan have experienced negative rates. Previous rules of thumb have been disproved, so it is not clear where the limits are. Higher rates impact insurers in three ways: borrowing, assets, and liabilities. Bonds and loans taken out by insurers will have higher rates as they are rolled over, extended, or floating rates reset. This cuts into profitability and needs to be stress tested. Indirectly, higher coupons increase both credit and inflation risk. Credit spreads on fixed income assets purchased by insurers in a higher rate environment will also be elevated, but there may be offsetting costs and increased volatility to those higher rates. A tight asset liability management, or ALM, match with limited convexity risk allows asset and liability cash flows to move in unison with rates, minimizing the impact on intrinsic value. A mismatch acts as leverage, magnifying small rate changes into material changes in value. Many investment loans, both bonds and mortgages, require dynamic repayment models. As rates rise, few borrowers choose to prepay the principal. This lengthens the duration of assets and adds convexity risk. It also indirectly impacts the economy, as movements between jobs to a different town or region become sticky and inefficient. The recent rise in rates has left many companies struggling to meet their debt obligations as debt rolls over. These zombie companies could survive only when rates were abnormally low. Defaults have already started to rise. Life insurers need to stress test scenarios more in the tail than those built for regulatory purposes. We have seen how quickly rates can rise, both recently and 40 years ago, and this should be tested. Rates increasing quickly to levels 10% above current levels, as well as negative rates, help determine the sensitivity and convexity of a specific block of business. Products should be priced, including these sensitivities, to avoid a catastrophic scenario, and ALM, with interactions between assets and liabilities, should also be contemplated. Our current understanding of dynamic lapses and the impact on defaults of higher rates are among my concerns. We don't have a full cycle of historical data for either. Some insurers tend to think of assets and liabilities as separate buckets, but it is important to make sure the assumptions behind the sensitivities and stress tests are consistent. High inflation has led to high combined ratios of over 110% for auto policies, and homeowners continue to see higher premiums due to increasing frequency of extreme weather events. Reinsurers are likely to react quickly, and this business reprices each year. The pandemic created mischief in the auto market with fewer miles driven, but more high-speed crashes. This recent experience has put pressure on auto policy profitability. Some writers cut advertising and allowed new business to stagnate until premium increases were approved by regulators. While the Federal Reserve and its policy committee are followed closely in the press, and investors attempt to outguess their future actions and motives, they are not the key player. The key player in the U.S. is Congress, where deficits are the norm. Politicians have delegated management of the economy to the Fed, along with monetary policy. Congressional actions that ignore federal debt levels are likely to be the primary reason rates increase from current levels. The lack of discipline has led to rating agency downgrades and a higher overall likelihood of rates going moderately higher. There are also increased possibilities of hyperinflation and stagflation, initially in countries that tie their economy to the U.S., and eventually even in the U.S. economy, despite the dollar being the reserve currency. Interest rates are not easily predicted over the short term, but continuing deficit spending increases the likelihood of higher rates at some point, and even a possibility of hyperinflation or stagflation. Overreaction by the Fed could lead to a deflationary depression. Rate changes will directly and indirectly impact profitability through borrowing and cash flows from assets and liabilities. Regulators and insurers will need to work together to ensure that pricing is both equitable to customers and sustainable for insurers.
Are you challenged to meet your need for actuaries? Actuarial Risk Management can help. ARMS Data and Modeling Institute, or DMI, is a team of talented and experienced modeling actuaries working with an extensive bench of senior consultants. ARMS will partner with you to shift all or part of your actuarial and modeling needs to the DMI at a significant cost savings without sacrificing integrity. Contact ARMS today about how the DMI's modeling evaluation services can help position you and your company for tomorrow's challenges.
Max, do you think that insurers nowadays are looking to balance the need for investment returns with potential risks that are associated with interest rate changes and looking at the investments that produce these higher returns?
Yeah, for many insurance products, this is the primary source of products. So, and yet it's extremely complex to manage and get right, especially when rates are moving as quickly as they have the last few years. Back when I was in a Rotary Club, I used to introduce myself as the person who makes sure policyholders get paid when they have a claim, while also making sure that the insurer makes a profit too. It becomes a win-win. We've seen more people with a trading mindset enter the insurance market of late, and they will have long periods of time where they make outsized profits due to outsized bets on things like illiquidity and credit risk. But if they are wrong even once, then the policyholder has a problem. They end up being the one who has to pay additional premium or take a lower benefit. And it's a form of leverage that these insurers are taking. And I think it can be a systemic risk even if enough insurers are forced to mimic these practices. And this is much more likely after long bull markets and periods of stimulus that we find ourselves in today. And even the guarantee association process that pays policyholders during an insolvency, kind of the last step, it could create a feedback loop that pulls in previously healthy firms as the insolvent firm, they make an assessment of the healthy firms. Well, that drives another healthy firm to be insolvent. Well, and it just cycles from there. So that's another thing that I worry about. But turning it back to you, Dave, how do insurers incorporate interest rate risk into their overall risk management frameworks? Is it like all the other risks, or does it become a very different process in your experience?
Well, Max, before I answer that, I just want to tell you the picture that came into my mind during your last answer there. And it was a picture from a cartoon of the cartoon character running off the cliff and their legs keep pumping and then they fall down.
Yeah,
And
Wile E. Coyote.
that's the picture I think of with those folks that are doing some kind of investment strategy that makes them look like they're brilliant until they're not. They're running off the cliff, and their investment strategy assumes that there is no cliff. So anyway, how do insurers incorporate interest rate risk, I think is what you asked.
Yeah.
And so I think it's treated differently in a lot of companies, and I think that's because of the fact that the predominant, or well, I won't even say it's predominant anymore. Maybe it hasn't been predominant recently, but the most common interest rate strategy in the long term on interest rate risk has been to say we're not trying to take any risk on this. That we're trying to balance things. We're trying to match durations, and you have a little bit of a tolerance for mismatch. And I think because of that, it doesn't get treated in the risk management framework the same way. And so you have other risks like credit risk, for instance, that you take credit risk all the time. It's there in every kind of bond, corporate bond transaction that you make, and so you're constantly aggregating that. Whereas with interest rate risk, because you assume you're going to manage it down to zero, you may not have as rigorous a process for tracking it and reporting it. Because, well, what's the answer going to be? Oh, well, that little mismatch you see that day, that was gone by the next day. It's just, we don't have instantaneous balancing of things, and so there is a danger that like Wile E. Coyote, you keep running, and the road's not there under you anymore. So Max, what do you know of the regulator's review? I'm sorry, the regulator's view of an insurance management of an interest rate risk, and how it's changed, how their view might have changed with as interest rates have changed.
Yeah, for those insurers who have an investor mindset, maintaining tight asset liability management or ALM constraints around duration and convexity metrics, the regulator really doesn't have a lot to do on those risks. A risk-focused exam can look elsewhere. But many insurers are acting like traders and making bets today, adding forms of leverage to outperform their benchmarks. We saw some banks, as Dave mentioned earlier, have problems in 2023 because they ignored basic ALM principles. And many of the still solvent banks hold unrealized losses that weigh on their balance sheets yet today. Regulators should bring in outside experts to understand these products, to understand these practices across companies and aggressively review their own regs to make sure they aren't adding to the risk. And this is where the NAIC model laws that require consistency can come into play and be very helpful. Otherwise, some insurers will play regulatory arbitrage, and domiciled business will move to the weakest regulator. I share a Warren Buffett anecdote about hiring traits with my risk students at Creighton University, and I'll use a Venn diagram, but trying to do it verbally here. If you think of three overlapping traits in an employee, being integrity, intelligence, and energy, and if you don't have integrity, the other two will kill you. And I think that's, there's some overlap between what we're seeing today and that story.
All right, Max. So, what advice do you have for insurers who want to do better with this, want to enhance their management of interest rate risk in the current environment?
Well, I'm a bit of a broken record here. I'll say stress testing. Answer stress testing to a lot of questions. If you look at scenarios where rates go up as well as those where rates go down, that will help you understand the nuances of the block of business that you have and help you decide where your risks are. We used to call it a price behavior curve, but it demonstrates the market value at various starting points for interest rates. Interest sensitive assets in this, where you have your x-axis is just different interest rates and the y-axis is the value. But the curves for interest sensitive assets tend to look like an upside down cup. So an upside down U would be another way to think of it. And the liabilities are like the regular shaped U or regular shaped cup. So if you put one on top of the other, if rates are stable, you have value. And if rates change by very much in either direction for a lot of these products, the insurer loses. When rates go up, the policyholder can leave. When rates go down, you start running into guarantees on the account value type products. Truly, a picture is worth a thousand words with this. It's much easier to look at the picture instead of looking at metrics like skewness, kurtosis, and convexity. These are theoretical statistical terms, but a picture, I think, describes them all really well and is easier to work with.
Reminds me of an experience I had where the actuary working for me designed a really clever pricing strategy for an SBDA block of business, and in his strategy, the worst profit was when interest rates stayed level, and it all profit was always improved by movements in interest rates. I couldn't, we couldn't in the end ever explain that to anybody, so we got killed over it, because on certain types of models that kept interest rates steady, we looked terrible. So anyway, Max, what are the primary reasons you think that people aren't managing their interest rate risk correctly?
Well, often their time horizon is too short. So they extrapolate today's assumptions into the future, assuming things won't change, but they will. The other practice I've seen is that firms ignore higher order metrics like convexity. If you, for example, combine short and long products and manage against a duration metric alone, you'll be susceptible to non-parallel shifts in the yield curve. Like we're experiencing today with an inverted curve. An example would be to manage a block of auto policies with payout annuities. There's many historical examples where it looked easy to make money until the economy zigged when you thought it would zag. A good risk manager spends a lot of time thinking about what they have, what they've missed in their analysis.
Well, Max, some firms use the Warren Buffett construct that says that insurance provides some kind of float for the investor. The assets can then be managed separate from the liabilities to optimize results. Are they missing something that could cause a problem for policyholders?
Yeah, I think they are. There's ALM risk if the liabilities have different interest rate sensitivity than the assets backing them. It's riskiest for long liabilities like long-term care, pension risk transfer, or workers' comp. There's less risk for home and auto since premiums act as an asset and coverage drops if you don't pay the premiums. That's the product that Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett generally are working with. But especially for the longer products, it's useful to segment the assets designed to support them so you can really show how you're matching either to your metrics like duration or to the underlying cash flows.
Today, Max made two points here that I want to repeat. First, we need to stress test in both directions, rate increases and decreases. We never know whether we're at the end or the middle of a long-term trend in interest rates. We need to be ready for either possibility. And secondly, try to learn from others' mistakes. The tuition at the School of Hard Knocks is very high, sometimes all that you have. Learning from others' mistakes is a freebie. How can you turn that away? We hope that you have enjoyed this episode of Crossing Thin Ice, presented by Actuarial Risk Management. If you found it valuable, please like, subscribe, and share with your colleagues.